Can you feel it? There it is, thumping through your brain, pounding through your veins. Are you ready? It is time, wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening. We're so glad you've chosen to tune into DLC, especially if you are one of our geeks and sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. We're going to be with you in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes with gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsors this week, Casper, Audible, and Simple Contacts are bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games in their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard, especially this week. I am your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who is no longer hiding his best material behind loot boxes, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, audience. Also, up top, a shout out to friend of the show and just friend in general. Amanda and I went to The Midnight when they played here live in LA. Holy crap. Sold out the Globe Theater. Tim is a expletive genius. These guys, it was their second live show ever. We've talked about The Midnight on this show before, usually as like a parting gift. My God, this is going to be a thing I'm going to tell my kids, like, oh yeah, I saw them at a small theater, a small club. I they're like a year away from playing arenas. If that, all that's going to ruin this band's trajectory is like infighting. Like I picture like Tim and Tyler be like, I'm the reason for the band, but my God, they're so good. People had blow up saxophones that they were waving in the audience. Just,
Yeah, we are both giant fans of The Midnight. Hopefully you guys have listened to their new album, which is phenomenal.
So good.
Yeah. So I'm very jealous I did not get to attend to that with you.
If they play again, you got to go see them live. See them.
I was at Board Game Geek Con this weekend as a special guest. So we'll be talking definitely some tabletop time this episode. Thanks at the top to all of the awesome people that came up to me at Board Game Geek Con and said that they listened to the show and that they love tabletop time, that they wish it was still in every single episode.
Dude had a shirt. Dude had a shirt.
I saw an old school, like at least 8-year-old Totally Rad Show shirt this guy had that was like still holding together somehow. We had a panel. There were people asking about you, Christian.
Aww.
And it was great. It was really great. And we'll be talking board games in this episode because I played a cubic buttload.
I played one.
Oh, that's good. That's good. But we also have news to talk about. There's still big releases. It's still the end of the year and there's still tons of games to talk about. And the best news is, guys, we have an awesome guest to do it with. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, oh man, I'm excited because once again, DLC stands for Diversity Looks Cool, because from Gaming Looks Good and Math Looks Good, as well as the Spawn on Me podcast, one of our favorite guests, Sharif Jackson, is back with us. Hey, Reef, what's up, buddy?
Hey guys, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me yet again. Setting off your Sunday night just right.
That is right. Yeah, we are recording a little early, and we probably will be as our usual recording time. So if you're one of the people that's been hanging out with us in the chat room on Mondays, we are changing our normal recording time to Sunday evenings, at least for the next few weeks, maybe longer. So hopefully maybe that'll actually allow more people to hang out with us. We're streaming two ways now, both on Twitch and on Caffeine at caffeine.tv/Jeff Cannata and twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. So lots of ways to come and hang out and participate live with us. And guys, we got a lot to talk about. Sharif, I have been wanting to have you on. You are sort of, I think of you as our go-to Nintendo guy. here on DLC because you are a Nintendo aficionado, lover of all things Nin. There's been a few big Nin releases since you've been on last. So I'm excited to hit those when we get to the playlist and other stuff we've been talking about. But let's start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happen in the world of games this week. And you can always submit stories for our consideration by visiting our subreddit. That is 5x5dlc.reddit.com. Really cool folks hanging out there, talking about stories, talking about our show, talking about video games in general. Really cool community of folks. So I encourage you to give it a shot. But Reef, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I think my story of the week, usually MPDs are not something that really gets, much attention from me. But I think it's fairly interesting how in October that Nintendo is pulling some pretty massive numbers for all of its products, basically. Because not only was the Nintendo Switch the top-selling console in October, but the SNES Classic Mini, you know, obviously a very old piece of hardware, but packaged in a new and tasty format, was number two on the MPD charts.
Yeah. Beating PlayStation 4 and Xbox One are two Nintendo consoles that are both supply constrained. So who knows how much they would have spanked the competition if you had been able to actually walk into any store and get both of those at any time during October. But that is actually pretty amazing news for Nintendo to be selling that well. Of course, PlayStation 4 and Xbox One aren't the new hotness. They're not the shiny new thing like those other two consoles are.
Well, one of them is.
Well, but not in October. That's right. Not in October, right. So this is the MPDs that came out now, meaning they're a month old. So this is pre-Xbox One X. It'll be really interesting to see what December's MPDs for November are like. So we'll see. You know, supposedly Microsoft said that Xbox One X is selling very well for them. So we will see. Nintendo does not report exact numbers to MPD. They're a little cagey about that, but we can surmise based on the numbers that they are beating below them. They sold well in excess of 600,000 Nintendo units in total. So that's combining those two systems. Pretty good. Pretty darn good. Sharif, I don't think this is a surprise that people are buying up Nintendo consoles. Switch is popular. It's certainly got a software library that would impress anybody at this point, with two sort of modern classics, one might argue. And then a Super NES that had a lot of online buzz and people were snatching them up. So does it surprise you, or does it just feel kind of fun and reassuring and encouraging?
It still does surprise me. I mean, the PS4 has been selling at, you know, pretty much historical levels of volume since it launched, and has been going fairly steady. Obviously, there's been a lot of news about Microsoft being behind and all that. So I'm not as surprised as the Switch outselling the One, but I am excited. I am surprised at it outselling the PS4, especially because I don't believe that the Pro really takes away sales that would normally go to the PS4 console. I do think that the Pro, you know, is for a sort of a smaller niche audience. And I think we'll see the same thing with the One X as well. Like I don't think like the regular Xbox numbers are going to dip that much. I'm assuming that there's not going to be people that were deciding between the One X and the One S. I don't think that there's going to be many people that buy a 1X that were originally planning on buying a 1S, you know, or one.
Well, the interesting thing will be, especially for next month's NPDs, which will include Black Friday in them, because that's still in October, or excuse me, and still in November. And we're seeing these crazy discounts on the Xbox One S. So
and
maybe
the PS4.
That
you can get a PS4 Slim for like, I think it's like $190 or $199 also. Like they're very, the yeah. Xbox One S I think is $189 and the PlayStation 4 Slim I think is $199. They're both ridiculously cheap.
Price to move, baby. Get in now. What's it going to take to get you inside one of these consoles, huh? Anecdotally, I will say I spent not this weekend, but the weekend before I spent with my sister's family. And she has got a 13-year-old, and he just got a PlayStation 4 Pro, even though they don't have a 4K TV.
But
he
you
just wanted to play.
You can't turn pro until you're 16. I mean, that's the PlayStation Union. They passed that.
No, he's he's being heavily recruited right now. It's more of a letter of intent.
Oh, got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
They got a hat for him, and there was a whole ceremony.
He signed with Big Baller Brand, which is now the brand of America.
Yeah. But yeah, no, he got the Destiny 2 PlayStation 4 Pro bundle and plays on his 1080p TV. So that's one he wanted. I don't know, 13-year-olds, who knows?
I think
anecdotally.
I think that's a pretty attractive bundle. It comes with the game and the season pass of Destiny 2. So if you're looking to get a PS4, like it's not priced higher and you get the white PS4 Pro, which I think is only available in that bundle here in the US. But I feel like
he wanted it because he gets the white PS4 controller, which lets him differentiate from his little brother. So like the white controller is all his, like, do not get your fingerprints on my controller.
It came up in the chat too, Burgundy's Musk saying like, how many more PS4s can they sell? And I think that's some of it. I think it's a couple things for Nintendo having a great October is that they did get more of these systems out. They're still not everywhere, but again, anecdotally, the end of the month, I was seeing like one or two at my local Target. I had friends texting me saying they bought one. And then the other side of it is there's a good chance that you might already have a PS4 or an Xbox One and you've been looking for a Switch. So you're going to buy those during October. And I think people that maybe haven't picked up an Xbox One or a PS4 were waiting for something like Black Friday. So I could see an uptick in that. But also I was at Target, what day is it today? Sunday. I was there yesterday and they had five of the Mario Odyssey Switches in stock. And they said they're getting more for Black Friday. So like there's going to be stock out there. I think November.
They kept saying, sir, you're going to have to buy something if you're going to keep coming in here.
And I say, I already have one. And I pulled my Switch out of my bag. They accused me of stealing. My daughter started crying. It worked out. I stole so many.
Yeah. And like, I think a lot of people just, understandably so after the Wii U, I think a lot of people play the waiting game. Like they said, look, I got to see if this system is really going to generate enough games to justify that purchase. Because for a lot of people, Zelda is not enough. So I think that a lot of those folks that, right. Want to play like Nintendo games, but don't want to really make that financial investment if they don't see other things, have finally seen like the onslaught of games, both, in like beginning, I wouldn't say it's an onslaught of third party yet, but there have been some pretty major third party like releases along with the massive first party ones. So I think that, this is that time when like a lot of people that said that they're going to wait it out are like finally jumping in, including my Spawn of Me co-host, Khalif Adams, who...
That's what I was going to say. I saw his eating crow on Twitter, like, I'm so sorry I said anything bad.
But I think that like a lot of people, this is when the waiting game kind of ends around this time.
It surprised me also to see how much coverage there has been of Skyrim on Switch and how much people seem to be excited about that. I didn't expect it to be that big of a deal, It's been a game that's been out on everything at this point, but people seem excited about that.
But now it's on a plane, train, and automobile with you. That's a differentiator. Yeah, like, right. I think it is kind of ludicrous that it and Doom are $60 again when I can get them on every other platform for $20. But it's that portability. It's the Vita version, but so much better than it ever could have been on Vita or on anything else. Like, right. You have a great game literally with you anywhere. It's
something that actually works. I mean, like, I was playing both Skyrim and Doom in between appointments where I meet a lot of my tutoring clients at like coffee shops or like libraries and stuff, and it's not only like the visuals and stuff, but to me it's like fully voice acted, music and all that stuff,
right.
and it's just it even though I've had a Switch since launch, I still get impressed when I can pull this thing out and, you know, and just hear everything that I would hear, you know, it's like through my tinny headphones or whatever. But it's still like very immersive. And I think that, you know, enough people have seen that, that they're ready to jump in, you know, and this is, you know, like before, you know, like Xenoblade is right around the corner. I mean, it's just, it's just, I mean, they're having a real, I would argue the best, or at least one of the best first 8 months of a console I've ever seen.
Well, Nintendo says 2/3 of all video game hardware sold in the United States was Nintendo hardware. And it's the second month in a row where that's true. So October wasn't a unique blip. It also happened in September. Pretty cool stuff. Christian, what is your story of the week?
Take a guess what my story's gonna be. So we're recording this Sunday night. So like last week, as soon as we have this discussion, it will be outdated and you can throw it away. Because
maybe not anymore, because it's out, at least the game's out now.
Well, you didn't hear that actually Star Wars Battlefront 3 is out. They just added a 3. It's a whole new game. So after last week's show, to catch you up,
I was editing last week's show to put it out, because just, you know, adding music and things, and it doesn't take me long to edit the show. And I texted Christian, like, the show hasn't even posted yet, and our entire discussion about Star Wars Battlefront 2 is outdated.
Yeah. So it launched with some, in my opinion, pretty ridiculous, a pretty ridiculous air quote progression system, and loot boxes that not only were pay to win, and that you could actually substantially, in my opinion, increase your power, defense, and stuff like that in the multiplayer game by purchasing things through loot crates, getting crystals to use for loot crate to then apply things to your character. And that is also a way that you could get some of these heroes, Luke and Darth Vader being the two most mentioned, because their cost was super, super high. Then EA reduced the cost of those heroes, but also reduced the amount of credits that you would get for completing certain tasks. And then after all of that and our discussion and wherever it went, I did a whole ALTMM about it last week that probably immediately got outdated as well. And then, like, pretty much right after that, Mr. Disney called Miss EA or vice versa, and they said, yo, what's up?
And, what are you doing? And, what are you up to, Mr. EA?
And EA, I'm sorry, Mr.
I'm playing Madden, bruh.
And EA said, like, what do you mean?
That sounds great.
What real money crystals? And they just, like, deleted it. And, like, mm-hmm. you can't pay money for things anymore. But I saw them myself yesterday in the wild. There still are, and I didn't buy one, but kind of wanted to. There are still, like, plastic cards for, like, crystals of, like, you know, right. the Xbox Live $20.
Yeah, I like that. The end cap on the in the aisle as you're heading toward the
gift
cashier to buy your game. It's like, oh, yeah, I'll pick up. Yeah, right.
Yeah. And so now, as of this moment, I don't know about when you're listening to this. As of this moment, you cannot pay money to get crystals in Battlefront 2. And they're working to improve the progression. And then my personal version of this, Jade Raymond, who has a great history for, you know, listening to a community and making great games, she put out a tweet saying, like, hey, we're working on this. You know, we have the best people on it. And I tried to be, I think I was civil. My reply, paraphrasing, is, but what was your plan before? And did you not have the best people on it before? And how are we supposed to believe you going forward when I feel like there was no vision for what had happened before? And her reply was, a reply to a bunch of people was just like, you know, we hope you to earn your trust back again. I don't know, dude. This game is
so weird. Okay. So let's break this down, because first of all, there was that big Reddit thread of the conspiracy theories that said they inflated the price at the beginning in order to then bust it down 75%. It was all part of their plan to make them seem like awesome. Clearly, that's not the case. Clearly, there was no grand scheme to fool you into thinking they're awesome. They were really just bumbling their way through this and trying to figure it out as the game was approaching launch, like T-minus 48 minutes. Let's just cancel it all. So it's a crazy drastic step to do, which happened really literally hours before the game went live.
Well, live to us mere $60 peasants.
Right.
It was live for the $80, you know.
I mean, that's where this all came from. Like, the people that had the early access are the ones that calculated all the numbers.
True. Yeah. And we're breaking it. I mean, there was some spreadsheeting happening. So, Sharif, let me ask you this question. Do you think – do you look at this as a victory for the consumer? And B, do you think this is something that makes you feel comfortable about recommending this game or, you know, giving money to EA in this way? Or were you even worried about that?
I don't think it's 100% consumer victory, because there was not a, at least I feel, a rational, level-headed criticism of EA. There was a lot of, and I'm not saying everyone that had a problem with it did this, but there was definitely that loud vocal minority that was harassment and death threats and all that, even, you know, all that stuff that went along with this.
Quick pause, though. But it looks like Jason, I think Shriver at Kotaku, like that tweet that went viral about, and I'm saying there weren't death threats, but this is the era we live in where that tweet that went viral of an EA, air quote, dev saying he received hundreds of death threats because of Battlefront 2. Jason did it in like an investigative piece, and that person doesn't work for EA. That was just a person lying.
But the
even so, even if you discount death threats per se, and I suspect there probably were a few, I think Sharif makes a good point in the sense that there is a level of belligerence.
Yes, unfortunately, that's what gets the coverage, right? But I do think that, yes, I do think that it is, you know, we're consumers. It's in our right to call out a company that we feel like is doing something not right and tell our friends don't get this and say we won't get it. And EA, instead of saying, well, you idiots are going to buy this Star Wars game anyway because it's Star Wars and we're not changing anything.
Which they really could have done, probably would have been true.
I don't know. Again, anecdotally and through my friend Stuart Wombat from TBS Gamer, like he told me it ended up on like his local Facebook parents blog, like a post like gambling for kids is in the new Star Wars game, don't buy. Like it made it to that level of,
I mean, it was a PR nightmare, but I really don't think that it would have been a flop.
Well, the first game didn't meet expectations, and it wasn't. It depends what we consider a flop. Like people are saying Justice League the movie is underperforming, and it made $100 million. So it's like, what are expectations, what's budget? I think there was it did enough to make do your Mickey Mouse again. It did enough to make Mickey very angry, and I think that's
that's a whole other conversation. Justice League came in below, like, I believe every other, I think the last few DC properties, right? Like under Batman versus Superman. Whatever, we don't have to get in that whole discussion. I mean, I think that EA probably would have done it if Disney didn't kind of come in and say, hey, guys, you know, this isn't happening. But yeah, I mean, I think that companies will test the waters and put some ridiculous stuff out there. And I think that this is an example where they knew that they had characters of value, obviously, with Luke and Vader and such. And they... Not saying that I think that there were a bunch of guys in a room saying, let's see how much these people will pay for it. But there were probably a bunch of guys in a room saying, how much will these people pay for it? You know, I mean, I have not worked in the game industry, but I've been in similar meetings where different things are getting valued. And there is definitely, I could definitely see that happening. Let's put it that way.
It was probably, to be fair, it was probably a bunch of guys in different rooms,
you know,
all on a conference
call. And, you know, and like, let's be transparent, right? You did not have to buy stuff to get this. But as we said, those people calculated, the people early access and on Reddit said it would take around 40 hours or so to unlock everyone. Yeah.
Just one of them. Yeah. So next question then is, do you think this
for them
was
to
the
lower
right move?
And get rid of the crystals?
What, turning off?
To just completely cut it out of the game, you know, hours before launch
it's paused.
Shutting it off.
It's paused,
right? Like I don't think they should have
the
paused
crystals
will
come back,
personally. Because I think that I agree with them lowering the price of Vader and Luke. I think that that's a little more sensible, and like that means that if you play the game a decent amount, you can get the people that are advertised in every ad and commercial, right?
Yeah.
I'm not one of these people that think microtransactions are easy. I think that there's some people that are like, hey, I know I'm not going to invest the time. I'll throw a couple bucks to unlock stuff. I never had a problem with that. My only problem is, number one, if that affects like competitive multiplayer play. And number two, if there is no way to earn that in a reasonable hour in game. So the fact that they lowered the time in game, I think, kind of solves my main issue with it.
But number three for Battlefront is that you couldn't just buy Darth and Luke. You were buying loot boxes that would be randomized what you would get, and then you would need to get duplicates to break things down, which is how you unlock them in game too. Like, you don't get them. It's randomized. It's blind bags. So it's not as
well. I don't think just being able to buy Luke and Vader would be better. I mean, people would be pissed about that.
You know how much
money
you need to spend on them.
Yeah, but people would be pissed about that too.
I think people would be angry about that too. Yes, but I think it's a whole different thing when you're blind bagging them, and you know, you're sitting here buying all of these loot boxes and doing all this other stuff to hopefully get the chance. Like, I think that's an extra layer of deceit that goes into this game and I think that's the part that kind of riled up parents, was this idea of, you know, air quote gambling, because while you're not getting real money in return, you are getting virtual currency that you use to spend on things in game, and you're not guaranteed how much you're going to get. If I put $20 into the game for loot boxes, and all three of us did, we would all get different amounts of in-game currencies back, and that's pretty nefarious if your goal as us three players is to unlock these heroes.
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely see a scenario where they in their heads thought that was the smartest way to do it, is like put kind of what Intihar was talking about last week, like put the coolest things, make the coolest things hardest to get. Don't let you just buy them outright, 'cause that'll make people angry, but actually have to work for it. And yeah, there are these weird side ways to invest money and then DE, you know, disenchant or break down those things and reconstitute them. But that's not the way we're thinking you would even do that. It's all about earning them in the game. Like, I can sort of see that logic, and it just kind of breaks down because of the way people, you know, min-max games and want to get that cool stuff. And the fact that they are the coolest characters in the game is a bad thing, because they're kind of core to the experience of Star Wars. But the smartest thing I read, and I wish I could credit who it was, I can't remember who it was, but the smartest thing I read about this whole situation was somebody said, this is basically, they created a free-to-play game and then put it in a $60 box. And that's the problem, right? Is that you have a license like Star Wars that's very, very expensive, and you need to make your money back right away. So you're going to have to charge money up front to make that investment back right away. But what you created was a game that was supposed to work inside this free-to-play model. So it feels really slimy to people, because it's like, I already paid you money to play this. Why do we have all these trappings of a free-to-play game in it?
And Star Wars already has a successful free-to-play game though too. So it's not that game.
And it is super successful. And the coolest characters are locked behind really hard to get stuff. So,
but it's free. And
right. But that's my point, is like this model in and of itself has already proven to work. So it's not like they were inventing it and you know, they were just applying what they already learned. Unfortunately, it was in a $60 box.
As I saw in the chat, I really like the model that games like Overwatch do. Make all the cosmetics loot boxes. People will pay for them. I have spent money on Overwatch loot boxes, even though I said I wouldn't.
So
it came out with some cool Halloween or something like that, and I was like, man, I'm going to spend money at the chance to get it, you know, like, you know,
that's what I said on Newest Latest Best. Let me unlock shriveled headed old guy Vader, you know, the let me look on you one last time with my own eyes.
Spoiler Vader. Is that the Vader you're talking about?
Yeah. Spoiler for 1982. But yes, That'd be awesome. Like, make Vader a core part of the game, and then let me unlock.
Yeah, exactly. Cool, I want to unlock Vaders, like Vader, you know? As the Anakin right. Force Ghost. You know, let me do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be rad, dude. Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Nobody would be mad at that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we leave this topic, though, I just want to, because I don't think I ever really pinned you down, Christian. Do you think that them just turning it off was the right move?
I don't know if it was the right move, but I think it was the quickest Band-Aid stopgap move they could put on it. I think the game, yeah, even with money buying crystals, the crystals that you pay real money for, we can talk about it in what, you know, when we talk about games we've been playing, the playlist, I've spent a decent amount of time with it. I got it from my Gamefly copy arrived, and I've been putting some hours into the game. The game has a progression problem that isn't solved by getting rid of being able to buy loot for progression. So I think the game has bigger problems than that, but I understand. It seems like the quickest, easiest move. And again, I think it was done because the thing that was getting mainstream traction, with like CNN questioning about it and parent blogs picking it up, was gambling. So the quicker you get rid of the real money problem, I think a lot of that mainstream, you don't want the Today Show opening with like, is your kid gamble? You know, like, you don't want that story. EA and Disney do not want that story. So I think it makes sense, but I do not think it fixes the game per se, unfortunately.
All right. Well, my story of the week is, I don't know, Christian, we were kind of talking on Twitter about whether you even wanted to talk about this. We don't have to spend a ton of time on it, but the Game Awards, a friend of the show, Jeff Keighley's sort of his attempt at creating something akin to the Academy Awards or the Grammys or something, some like an industry-wide prestigious televised game awards called the Game Awards, announced its nominees. And the list is, I think, pretty solid. I'm in a year, 2017, that has some of the greatest games and probably more great games than any recent year I can think of. A year that's going to be very difficult for me to nominate my own top five, as we will do at the end of the year, as we do every year. I think these nominees are pretty strong. I'll just mention the game of the year, and then if you guys want to pick out some more interesting stuff or whatever, feel free. But the game of the year, the top five, the big head honcho top tier award, are Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, Super Mario Odyssey, so Nintendo double dips, and only five nominees, Nintendo double dips, but hard to argue with those two. Horizon Zero Dawn, which I was very happy to see in there. Persona 5, in my opinion, the most surprising entry. And then PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. So that's your top five games of the year nominees according to the Game Awards. Lots of other categories, best narrative, best art design. There's a lot, the best independent game, and then the specific genres. There's even a best VR category. I want to mention the fact that the trending gamer, which is a category that started last year where it's sort of just a personality in gaming, friend of the show and our personal good buddy Andrea Renee got a nomination, which is pretty awesome to see. Kudos to her. Yeah. Lots of other stuff there, including even student games this year. Sharif, what do you think of the top five and
game of the year? I am one of these people that does not think PUBG should be included here. I do think that they should be games that are released. PUBG is a great game.
Well, I think it's going to be released in December.
I don't think it's that much to ask that a game is released. I just don't. And I think that it's been a great experience. It's dominated the headlines for a lot of, you know, Twitch streaming and like all that stuff. Like, I don't deny that it's a great experience, but I think for game of the year, it should be a game released in that year. Otherwise, I've not played Persona 5, but you know, I've heard a lot of great things about it. I've played the other games, and I absolutely agree that they should be Game of the Year nominees.
Well, it's interesting. There is a new category this year at the Game Awards. To kind of even address that specifically, it's a Best Ongoing Game, which is like, games that have you know, that people are still playing, that have regular updates, like awarding the fact that it doesn't really fall into a category if it came out a year, 2 years, 5 years ago, but it's still getting giant changes and it still has this big community and there's still a lot of work to be recognized on it, which I thought was great. But then you look at the best ongoing game category and it's Destiny 2, which, okay, but it's ongoing, but it was released this year and it's only ongoing a couple of months right now, which is, it's just odd. And like PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is there. Overwatch, Grand Theft Auto Online, Rainbow Six Siege, and Warframe. Now, for my money, Warframe should win. It won't, but it should, because now talk about an ongoing game that's had huge changes, and it epitomizes the ongoing game idea, in my opinion. But
yeah, I mean, a few things I also liked is I really liked the fact that when you look at the best voice performance, it just really shows you how many great, mm-hmm. Strong women characters with great voice performances that we've had, which I think is really sort of a great thing for the industry to recognize that.
Yeah. Only one male in the five nominees. That's pretty awesome. And both performers in Uncharted Lost Legacy got nominated. The woman who plays Aloy in Horizon Zero Dawn, and Melina Jurgens, who plays Senua in Hellblade.
I have to give it up to my other co-host, Ciceros, that we stand in the chat. I agree with his criticism that there should not be a combined sports racing category, because it does leave some deserving sports games out there, like Madden and The Show. And
like, those games should only be in there if it's a racing sport. Like, put your F1 in there, put NASCAR in there. But like, yeah. Like Forza, you know, like Need for Speed or Forza 7. I guess that's kind of, but you know what I mean? There is racing as a sport, right?
You
can't put Need for Speed in.
Like, it should be a battle of sports games,
which it isn't, but
you know, and then have and then there's enough racing games that come out each year. I agree that that should have its own category. Shout out to Cicero for making that point, which I agree with, but. In general, yeah. I mean, this was a hard game. This is a hard year for me to play everything. I did not get to everything. But man, almost everything that I really dove into, aside for very few exceptions like Andromeda and stuff, I thought was just super high quality.
Yeah. I was very pleased to see What Remains of Edith Finch get a few nominations for Best Independent Game and Best Narrative. Yeah, it's a work of art. So I'm glad to see that. And I was glad to see Divinity 2 get a role-playing game nom. I mean, a lot of the games that I love are here. And it's not easy to put these together. So kudos to Jeff. Christian, did you have any thoughts? I know you were kind of unhappy with the way that there is audience participation involved.
It's like adding audience participation to the NBA All-Star ballot. I like Jeff Keighley. I think I see what he's trying to do. We had him on the show, I don't know, a couple of years ago, talking about what he's trying to do with this show at the time. But like, I don't know. I think the fact that this show gets any, like, we talk about it or that any blog writes it up, but we're not going to talk about Giant Bomb's Game of the Year. We're not going to talk about IGN's Game of the Year list. We're not going to talk about the guest lists. We're not going to talk about Gary Whitta's Game of the Year. Like, I know this is a collection of press that nominate, but this award is I'm gonna hold my tongue. I'm done talking about the game awards.
All right, fair enough. Well, let's just move on then and go to our first sponsor, because that's a great segue to talk about sleep. Do you get good sleep? You guys get good sleep? There's a better way to sleep. If you have poor sleep, oftentimes the last thing you consider is your mattress. But I was in that boat. I definitely waited way too long to get a new mattress. I took the same mattress that I went to college with. I moved it 12 times in college and then after college, and it was beat up and sagging and pathetic, and I still slept on it. And then I wondered why I wasn't getting good sleep and would wake up achy and feel weird. It's the mattress. And that's, it's just so simple now to be able to replace your mattress, because Casper exists, and Casper is there to provide high quality mattresses, but then just completely eliminate all the friction it takes to replace your mattress, which is wonderful, which is a lot of the reason I didn't do it earlier when I was hauling it around in college and after. And that's because I didn't want to go into these stupid chain stores that where you walk into a warehouse and some guy is on the radio yelling at me about the mattress on President's Day weekend. And I'm not going to do that. I will, though, go to Casper's website and select the mattress because it's inexpensive and it's high quality. I don't have to think about it. I can just click on it, and then it arrives at my house and unfolds amazingly. That's what happened. I got a Casper mattress. It unfolds so easy, and I can try it for up to 100 nights and not have to make my decision whether or not I even want to keep it. If I don't, if I ended up not liking it, which I didn't, I ended up liking it. But if I didn't like it, they would come to my house and take it away and refund my money. So it just makes it easy. You spend a third of your life sleeping. You should be comfortable. And these are comfortable, high quality mattresses. They're designed, developed, and assembled in the United States. They have an average of 4.8 stars across Amazon, Casper, and Google, with over 20,000 reviews. This is the internet's favorite mattress. And they have three different models: the Casper, the Wave, the Essential. You can check them all out. It's so easy. Guess what? We're going to hook you up. You're going to get $50 off your mattress purchase by using our promo code. Just go to Casper.com, Casper.com/DLC. Use our promo code DLC when you check out. $50 off. Easy. Shipping's free. It's easy. It comes to your house. I loved the process of getting my Casper mattress. It arrived. I sliced it up, sliced open the thing. They give you like a little cool little slicer that lets you unbox the thing. And then it just kind of unfolds like a magic creature that I then get to sleep on. You know, it's like my own little Falcor. Anyway, Casper.com/DLC, promo code DLC. Upgrade your sleep. Feel better. Sleep more soundly. It's good for you. So much to play, so much to play. Sharif, let's start. I know you got a lot on your list here, and we will get to it all, but I want to start with Mario Odyssey, because like I said, you are like my go-to Nintendo guy. Mario Odyssey is great. Tell us how great Mario Odyssey is.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of those things where I know some people might get sick and say, why does everybody say this game is great? There's a couple of scenes that I've experienced in this game why I think it's great. And this is beyond the fact that, you know, it's just it feels great. The platform is great. The like levels are like really cool.
I want you just to pause there though for a second.
Sure.
Because people do gloss over that because it's expected to be a Mario game, but just hit that stuff again because it nails it. Like just reinforce, because so many platformers and 3D platformers especially don't.
Yeah, it is
nails it.
It is difficult to make a 3D platformer with a camera that feels as good as a two-dimensional 16-bit platformer. You know, and obviously Mario 64 did it, but you know, and Mario Galaxy did it. But this is really the latest one that just feels really, really, really good. Meaning every time you jump, it kind of happens exactly the way you want. Like I never feel like the controller is failing me or the camera is not pointed in the right direction. That stuff is hard to do. I mean, there's a lot of 3D platformers out there that don't quite get that. And of course the platforming in, you know, other open world games is not their strength. So it's almost universally terrible. So they really got that. The level design just really encourages you to peek around every corner. Because there is so much stuff in this game, so many little things to uncover. There's like not only like sort of things around the corner, but there's like, you know, sort of treasure maps that refer to entirely different maps than what you're on. and they don't tell you where things are. So you have to.
There's not just things around the corner. There's corners around the corner.
Yeah, exactly. I won't say what they are, but they're essentially warp points that bring you to entirely new parts of maps that you've already been on. I mean, it is like they really took the whole idea of finding like maybe 3 coins around the corner and just multiplied it by like a million.
That's all they did in their little design studio. They just pushed the multiply by a million button.
Yeah.
And it all worked out.
And like I think the thing that got me really excited when I first started playing was I found a secret room and I got the power moon, which is sort of like the currency in this game. And then one thing I was not expecting is I found another one in the same secret room. It was like a secret in a secret.
Our secrets got secrets.
Yeah. And like, it was nuts. Cause you're just not trained to do that. Like you find a secret room, you're like, hey, I found that secret. Great. Not to keep digging. I mean, it is like inception levels of power moonery.
It really is like they just took any kind of limits off of anything and went crazy, just sticking them in all these places. But it's wild how, I mean, it's not that they don't repeat themselves. They do repeat themselves as far as using some gimmicks over and over again. But there's so many unique ways that they do it, and they don't reserve the power moon for some kind of amazing thing that you accomplish. Sometimes it is an amazing thing you accomplish, but they're so liberal with how they just divvy them out that, and I think that's a wonderful thing. Cause I feel like in previous Mario games, certain things will feel like they're stingy with them because they're really prestigious, you know? And I just love how they went, little stuff can earn you power moons, big stuff can earn you power moons, and everything in between. We're just going to keep flooding them with, flooding you with them.
Right. I mean, I kind of equal it to like what's I think evolved into the modern kind of achievement system in games. You used to just get achievements for like really difficult stuff, but now you get achievements for completing levels or doing this.
Yeah.
But there's also achievements for hard stuff. And I think that's where Odyssey really nails it, is you get rewarded constantly, and you get rewarded more if you take a gamble, you know? And the fact that, that the game supports the video capture means if I have something cool that's not too spoilery, I'll post it on like social media and just get a whole bunch of people like, I had no idea Mario game had that in it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It really lives up to it. Like it is an amazing, amazing game. And, Mario Galaxy is definitely one of my top 3D Marios, and I'm not sure where this will fall. I'll probably need some time to kind of separate from just the newness of it, but man, is this one good. This one's really good.
It's true. Are you playing it mostly in handheld mode or mostly on a big TV or
I played mostly handheld mode. I did play a sizable chunk of it on docked, and it looks really great docked.
And did you, when you did that, were you playing with motion controls or no?
No, I was playing with the pro controller while it was docked. Now I don't have a 4K TV, so I'm not sure how it looks like upscaled on a 4K TV, but
it looks nice.
On a 1080 TV, it looks outstanding. Like it really pops well, like the colors, and like the, hearing the music on a large TV as well was like really, really great. One thing that I think is underappreciated about kind of Mario games is how each game since the second Mario has almost a completely different soundtrack. Like they do reuse a few things, but in general, the main themes and stuff are always completely different. It's the same thing here. I mean, and I find myself hubbing it, that kind of stuff. Just a fantastic game. And obviously family friendly, and there's co-op play, and that kind of stuff. Right. So, I think Zelda is the superior game to me. But this is the game that will push Switches during the holiday.
Interesting. So what puts Zelda above Mario for you personally.
Well, I think that Mario is a very, very great interpretation of what Mario 64 did, you know, back in 96. So I think it's a really, really great modern iteration of something that already existed. Whereas I think Zelda creates something completely new. Like they kind of do not complete. It's the culmination of what open world games are supposed to be, in my opinion. That like where the exploration is the game.
You wouldn't argue that it's the culmination of the original Zelda done back in 1984 or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. I think that it does share a lot of like a similarities with that, including the difficulty, because I sure died a lot at the beginning of Breath of the Wild. yeah. I mean, I feel like I've like with Odyssey, I've played great games like Odyssey. I don't think I've ever played a 3D game like Breath of the Wild where it's literally about exploring with some battling mixed in. Like it's amazing to me. Like Breath of the Wild to me is like it's better than a good game. Like it's like an achievement of the industry, I think. That's why I put Zelda above it.
All right, sticking with the Nintendo on the Nintendo tip, you've also been playing Skyrim and Doom on your Switch. You kind of referenced that a little bit earlier in the show, but dig deeper into that. And you said you've been playing it, you've been playing them, you know, between meetings and on the go.
Yeah, I mean these are both games that I've played already. You know, so I'm very, very familiar with them. But man, like I said before, there's nothing like just taking it out of suspend mode. Don't have to wait for it to boot up and just playing for 5 or 10 minutes, just like doing a quest and putting it back in suspend mode, you know, or like playing up an arcade challenge on Doom and just seeing how you can get and just putting it in suspend mode. That's the thing that I think people that don't have a Switch, I don't think it's really trumpeted enough, is how fast the operating system is and how nimble
it has to be. You're so right. It has to be. Like, it just would not work if you had to boot up every time you turn it on the go. It wouldn't be a truly portable system. But you think about how the DS and the 3DS have always worked, where you just flip it open and you're playing. That's how the Switch had to work. And kudos to them for recognizing that and then making it happen, because it's awesome.
I agree with you, but Nintendo has also had two generations of arguably the slowest console UI I've ever seen. You know, so I didn't believe that they could do it or that they were invested in doing it, but I think that this is right. where they really told Nvidia, like, guys, just do this.
that's awesome. And Doom in particular I find to be wondrous on the handheld. Like it's amazing to me that the frame rate feels solid and a game that moves that fast and is that frenetic can play similarly to how I played on my beefy PC on this handheld device and look beautiful.
Let's not understate the fact that you're playing it on a Nintendo device, right? I mean, this is a console that added sweat to Mortal Kombat 2, and the fact that, and you'll talk about Wolfenstein 2 in a little bit, I think, Jeff, but the fact that like both Doom and Wolfenstein 2 are going to be playable on a Nintendo system, like they're rated M for mature for mature. Especially Wolfenstein. Doom is like demons, fine, whatever, but still super gory. But Wolfenstein, them people, like you're ripping limbs off of people.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah, and like I had Wolfenstein for the Super Nintendo, where they removed all the imagery, all the. Yeah. I think the dogs they took out too, because they didn't want you to shoot dogs. I mean, it's just like I said, being able to play for just these little bits, these massive games. I know a lot of people say that Nintendo is usually behind the technology race because they don't push out, you know, the same like visuals and the focus on like power. But I think being able to take these on the go and have them instantly available is a technological win and something that we haven't seen before, from a technical level, which I think is a huge win for them.
Okay, so both of you guys have played Assassin's Creed Origins. It's on both of your playlists. I have been raving about Assassin's Creed Origins. It's straight up my favorite Assassin's Creed game ever. that's not saying much because I didn't really like the Assassin's Creed franchise, but it is saying much in the sense that it has fixed what I thought ailed that franchise. And now I am just addicted to this game. In fact, I think about it. I'm, you know, kind of sidetracked and onto other things, but I really am going to come back to Assassin's Creed Origins because it's The Witcher. It's the kinds of games I like. It's Horizon Zero Dawn, whatever. Are you liking it, Sharif and Christian? What do you guys think of it?
Well, I absolutely love it. I'm not the hugest Assassin's Creed fan as well, though I did love Black Flag, and I thought Syndicate was pretty good. But this game, now I haven't finished it, but I've gotten through about, I don't know, maybe 11 hours or so. Not only the performances, but you really feel like you are in another culture. Really do. Now, I'm not Egyptian, so I can't talk about, you know, the authenticity of, you know, the phrasings or that kind of stuff. But I do know that they did consult very heavily on this game to make sure that they got it right. You know, and they talked about
supposedly they're going to include that mode where you're going to be able to like have lectures from professors inside the game world. So it's got to be fairly
exactly. And like this game has made me like go on research some of this stuff that I've been finding and like some of these phrasings and the gods that are mentioned and that kind of stuff. It just feels, I agree with you that it does feel like Witcher and Zero Dawn in terms of just getting lost in this world doing side quests for like people and good ones.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They are good. Yeah.
You know, right. There's even been some funny moments. Like I can't remember last time I've laughed at an Assassin's Creed game.
because of the game. Like you've laughed because of like a glitch, but not like
No. I've actually laughed because of some of the situations and the writing, you know? I've had a blast with it. And obviously, you know, being a big proponent of diversity in the industry. I mean, just seeing all these beautiful brown faces in the game, not compromising, like there's not like they're like you are in, you feel like you're in Africa, not like sort of a whitewashed version of Egypt that we've seen in the media for decades,
right?
You know, so it really feels awesome.
Are you telling me that my favorite movie of all time, Cleopatra, portrays that area incorrectly based on the actors that are in it?
Sadly, Christian, you don't have to go that far back. You can go to Gods of Egypt like 2 years ago. You know?
Hey, you're telling me there's precedent for this and it continues today? I don't know. By the way, I would like to mention that I am playing Black Panther and Black Panther 2. I just got the email, so I'm pretty excited.
Well, you're playing Assassin's Creed Origins as well. Are you as hyped on it as the two of us?
So we talked about it when it came out. I remember I spent time on all three of the Ides of the 27th. I know Ides means the 15th, but you know what I mean. The day that video games killed all of us, October 27th.
Right.
And so you had asked me, you're like, I don't think you'd seen the thing. And I was like, are you? And you were like, are you at the city? And I was like, I think I'm right at the city. Oh man.
Oh yeah, because right. So let's give listeners context, cuz you were like, the story is just, there's nothing that I hangs it on, there's no stakes, and I was like,
I stand by that, by the way, but yes.
It does start very generic and odd and sort of drops you in the middle of, you don't know what's going on, but there's definitely a moment when it gets real personal and I think you had not gotten to that moment.
I had zoomed out and looked at the map and started like hyperventilating. I was like, this map is too big. So I started just doing all the little stuff around me. And I think I'd probably played, I don't know, 3-4 hours or whatever. And then I jumped on, I think it's on my Twitch. If it's not on my YouTube, which is just Christian Spicer 713, it will be soon. But I was like playing and I was like, I guess I'll leave this area. Like I was No Man's Skying it, right? So I go to
not leaving your home world
to leave the area. And then I get that personal mission or whatever. And so I'd already played for whatever it was, 4 hours or I don't know, whatever it was. And then I leave and then like the title screen comes up and I was like, oh, I've been in the prologue for 5 hours. I haven't even started the game yet.
Classic Spicer.
There's like this moment on stream where I'm like, yeah, I guess. This is the start of the game.
Living in the prologue.
I was, you know, whatever that Dragon Quest Inquisition. I'd not left the hinterlands or whatever. I was just wandering around, knocking. There was so much to do in Cyber, however you say it. And I was like, I'll wait for the, I thought like the fog would lift over the next area of the map. And like the guy's like, when you go to leave the area, he's like, you sure you want to leave? And I was like, can I come back? I think I can come back. I don't think they'll like kill this whole part of the map, but I probably shouldn't leave yet. And so I was just plugging away.
Yeah.
Wait, but did you get to Alexandria and go, oh my God.
I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet.
Christian.
I'm still plugging away. I've gone.
Not even the biggest city.
Yeah. Also, one thing I really appreciated is I never felt like I had to like go to the map, go to the quest log, highlight something and follow it. I could explore naturally and run into things. Like I ran into Alexandria I was just doing stuff. And I was on a boat and it was like, you reach Alexandria. I was like, oh yeah, that's a quest that I have to do. You know, those.
Yeah.
They really well,
I use that eagle all the time, man. Anytime I get on a horse heading to a place, I'm like in the eagle checking stuff out, looking for cool things around what's over there. What does that look like? Oh, that looks cool. So I'm like, I love that eagle function. It's not really.
Yeah. It's really, it's also a great way to fast travel.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, but I think like any other year, this would be a game of the year candidate, and I feel like this year it might not make top fives. Which is, I stand by what I said after that. My first couple hours not leaving the first year, I think Horizon Zero Dawn is better. But like, I'm not saying that to diminish this game. It's like when you're forced to rank them, like that's how incredible of a year this year has been for games, and it's just I hope they continue to build off of this version of Assassin's Creed because it's pretty phenomenal.
What about Battlefront 2? We talked about it a lot in the news section, but you said you've been playing it.
Yeah. So I stand by what I said after my early access impressions of the campaign in that I am a huge Star Wars fan and this game captures the look and feel of Star Wars in a very, very big way. And it's, you know, it scratches all those things. It's a catnip for Star Wars fans, right? You're like, I feel like Frostbite was made to display Stormtrooper armor on video games. Like just unbelievable. But after the early access version, I'll be vague. There's going to be some Star Wars Battlefront 2 spoilers here. Very vague. But if you don't want to know nothing about it, I'm sorry. Don't listen to this part. But after the early access part ended, and you could kind of go past those first three levels of the game, you encounter several moments where you aren't playing as the person you advertised. Like this game's campaign is advertised in a certain way. And well, I can say how it's advertised. That's a spoiler. It's advertised that you are this person in, you know, working for the Empire and you're, you know, doing this stuff to avenge the death of the Emperor after the Death Star blew up. Like that's trailer material. And you quickly start going on fanfic greatest hits. Like,
oh, don't say anymore. You've already now. I was listening, and now I feel like you've said too much.
Okay, great. Well, how about listen to this part? You don't need to play it.
I don't need to play it.
You don't need to play it. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's like I love Star Wars. But you don't need to play it. And so the campaign, it's fun and it's neat or whatever. But some of the Jeff, you can't see me, can you? Because you're not watching Twitch.
I try not to.
How do I tell you this to when you can listen again? Some of the people you play as, it's neat because I like that character, but the way... Sharif, have you played this game?
I've not played Battlefront 2 yet.
Okay. The way you play as them isn't fun. So, like, there are amazing third-person action combat games where you don't shoot stuff. In this game, you're mashing A to battle. Like there's not a quick time combat there. It's not a fun thing. No, it's not quick time, but it's like Devil May Cry. Gotcha. You have a sword?
Okay. All right. We're definitely
I know, I'm sorry. I warned okay.
So you're saying that there are levels that you don't like.
There are levels I don't like, and because it doesn't play to the game's strength. The game's strength is it's an incredible shooter where I want to be shooting stormtroopers. And a lot of this game, you get away from that, and it feels like it's paying fan service to someone that's like, what are the chances? Okay. No, this is happening again.
Now I know the chances are 100%. So well done, Christian.
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. You're not sorry. We'll circle back because I want to thank Kurt, who I met at BGGCon, who's a fan of the show and hooked me up with a copy. So he's like, he works at EA. And he's like, hey, I love the show. I want to make sure you play this. Here it is. And
what are you playing on?
I wanted to play it on Xbox One, but he handed me a PS4 copy, so I'm playing on PS4.
Well, the good news, I mean, I'm not spoiling plot, which also becomes very like you'd expect it. But again, it doesn't hide the ball with what's happening. It was just mismarketed, kind of the same way Halo or, you know, but it's weird. It's weird the way they did it, because I think if they had marketed it this way, I think more people would have been hyped about the campaign because...
But it was supposed to be a surprise, and now it's not because of you.
I don't think it's supposed to be a surprise because it's not a big reveal. A level just starts, and then you're like, what? Okay.
All right. Fair enough. We'll circle back on that. Wolfenstein.
How far are you?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm a ways. Christian, what do I say about Wolfenstein 2? I'm going to finish
the character.
Thumbs down for me. It is not my jam. I think the story is interesting so far. I completed New York, so I'm still super early. I mean, I haven't even
played, like, you're super early.
Three of the missions that I played in press events that I was at. So I'm still super early. I think I'm past that, but that's the last memorable thing I can think of right now. Here's my issue with this game. I know you played on easy, Christian, which I think slants your perception of this game, which is that it's not a fun shooter, in my opinion.
It's not. Doom is so much better.
So much better. I mean, there's like, I could name 50 shooters that are better. I think it does a really poor job of just sort of letting you know you're being shot.
Yep, and from where.
And from where, and the shooting is not satisfying. I mean, if you look at the pure, beautiful joy of Destiny 2, for example, just the reason people spend hours and lifetimes in that universe is because it's just the mechanics devoid of any context are pleasurable. It is joyous to shoot guns in that game. The pure laser pistol mechanic in Destiny 2 is pleasing. It feels right. You feel powerful. You get cool, you know, feedback. Numbers shoot off of people and stuff like that, which isn't to say that numbers shooting off people is the only way to do it, but they happen to just find a way for them that does it perfectly, right? Wolfenstein is a very old school, is in an old school tradition, and I think intentionally so. It's of a time period and sort of a descendant of, you know, the first person shooter of all time. And I think it tries to bring forward some of that DNA. And I think that's just a bad design decision because it's inherently not pleasurable for me. Results may vary, but for me, it's not pleasurable to even just play the game. I think the narrative thing that they're going to do, and I'm going to finish this game so Christian and I can do a spoiler talk about it, but I think the narrative thing they're trying to do is interesting and ambitious and cool and wild and over the top, and like you can't really have this kind of thing in any other medium, which is interesting. But I don't like playing the game. I don't.
Aren't you playing on easy?
Well, I may end up just to get through it, but that's a sad commentary.
It's not. Because you're playing this game for a different reason. And I think if you go back and
Don't I just watch the YouTube of all the cutscenes strewn together?
Because it's different. I'm not going to sit here and argue that games make you violent because you're engaging with them. I'm not going to go that far. But like, there is something different about being the one doing the thing versus watching the thing.
But I don't think that playing on easy is a fair representation. Like, You can be very positive about the game because all of the faults in its mechanics fall to the wayside because you can just stand in the middle of the room and shoot people.
No,
it's just not how the game is meant to be played.
No, well, says you. It's an option that they developed.
The five other difficulty levels. It's not like there's just medium, hard, and easy. There's five of them, and easy is literally like, I'm a bullet sponge, and my enemies aren't.
And they still are. You've bought into this notion that Halo Combat Evolved has, you know, kind of first championed that there's a correct way to play a game.
I'm not saying that there's a correct way to play the game. I'm saying that if you're playing 20% of the available options of how people appreciate this game, that's a pretty skewed vision of how the game is encountered by most people. And I think,
don't think so. I think a lot of people played this game either on the second to easiest or easiest setting. I play all of the Uncharted games on the easiest settings, and those are some of my favorite games of all time. It's the experience that you want it to be. And I agree, even on easy, the combat isn't phenomenal, but I wasn't playing this game for the combat. Just like I'm not playing, pick a game, Mario Cross Rabbids for the story, right? And so people say, it's like you saying, if you skip those cutscenes in that style of game, me saying, well, that's a sad state to the way that you're supposed to play. You're like, well, no, you're playing it for the mechanic or the puzzle or the whatever, and the story didn't grab you. So here the combat didn't necessarily grab me. Parts of it are fun. Parts of it bog down, especially on the harder difficulties. So I did my best to eliminate that part of the
game. I have other criticisms that have nothing to do with the difficulty of the combat too. I think the level design, while
I talked about, go back and listen, I think you'll see that I talked about all this, but I also then just sung the positives of the experience of the story. But yes, go ahead. The level design is so
you agree that the level design is bad. They are to be commended for always having multiple ways through a place and lots of side things and way to find like secret way to sneak around the back of a guy. All that stuff is cool from a level design perspective, but almost invariably it's confusing and unhelpful. The minimap is wildly unhelpful and frustrating, invisible walls everywhere. And it's just, yeah.
And I'd heard when I was streaming this game that, you know, people are saying, well, that too is maybe a throwback because the first game is literally a maze. Like, right. It's the idea of this game is supposed to be that way. I also feel like the levels in Wolfenstein to trade air quote authenticity for enjoyable level design, where like the stairs, like a spiral staircase will go down and you can get stuck behind this thing because that's how a staircase would be. That's how a house would be designed. But like, I don't need a room that doesn't go anywhere. You know, give me interesting level design. But I think all of your criticisms of the game are spot on, but I think Sharif, you need to play this game. I don't know if anyone on Spawn on Me is playing it. I've missed the last couple episodes you guys have done because of travel, but
I own the game. I just haven't, you know, I've been so into Assassin's Creed. Like when I set up my PC to play a game, now it's Assassin's Creed.
I'd much rather play Assassin's
But I do have
Creed.
A question though. Did you guys enjoy Wolfenstein: The New Order?
Yes.
Christian loved it.
Okay.
I did not.
So, Jeff, is this kind of more of the same from that? Or do you think it's actually worse than that?
It definitely feels like a more ambitious narrative than that. And is really biting off a lot in that sense of this alternate fiction and creating, just going balls out on a crazy vision of a future with wild characters. And yeah, it's got something that it wants to say, and that's clear. And I think much more than the first game did. But yeah, I mean, I didn't love the shooting mechanics in the first game either. So yeah.
Because like, I'm trying to diagnose if this is like a situation where if it's like, if you like the first one, you'll like the second one. If you don't like the first one, you won't like the second one.
Yeah.
The first one, in my opinion, well, one, I think, Sharif, if you're playing on PC, you'll find it more enjoyable. I think it's built more for PC. I think both Doom is as well. I think Doom handled the transition to console better, but I think it's movement speed, the fact that you won't be aiming down iron sights as much, because when you pull up your iron sights in Wolfenstein, your gun obscures at least a third of your screen, where like in Destiny and Halo and stuff like that, Call of Duty, it doesn't do that. And with a mouse, you kind of don't need to pull up iron sights because you have the accuracy of mouse and keyboard. I also think in Wolfenstein 2, while you can be stealthy, they go more for these big battles. That in Wolfenstein 1, I feel like there were a couple of those, but a lot of that game, it introduced that stealth mechanic, explore the world, and you didn't have as many encounters with like eight mechs. And
I feel like this game is constantly pushing me to go stealth. You know, the fact that you show up in an area and instantly it says the bad leader is over here, and if he freaks out, then he calls everyone else. So kill him stealthily.
Are you ever able to do that?
I've done it a couple of times. A
couple of times.
Yeah, it's not easy.
And I think in Wolfenstein 1, it was a little easier. I think this has that same mechanic, and I don't know if it's intentional because you start this game not at full strength. And
it's
I don't know.
So if, frustrating.
And I don't know if it's supposed to make you feel that way. Because I think
it is. I mean, I should have asked the devs that, because I was like, is my build broken on one of these press events? I only have 50 health, and every time I get more than 50 health, I go down to 50 health. I'm like, so, no, that's intentional. It's like, is there a setting?
I think, and maybe I'm projecting genius that where it isn't there, but I think it's supposed to remind you of the first game where you get into this thing, take out the commander, use stealth to do this, and in the first game you were this super powered killing machine throughout all of it, and you would go and do that. In this game you're trained that in Wolfenstein 2 you're trained that that's how you're supposed to do it, but you only have 50% health, and for me at least half the time, even when I went all the way to easy, I wasn't able to do it. I'd be spotted and I'd be like, crap. And it's this idea of you as BJ Blazkowicz struggling with, you know what you are, what you're built to do, but you're not as good at it. And because of that, his internal monologue is, what's going to happen? What's my legacy? What am I going to leave behind? And in that regard, the frustration, if intentional, is brilliant. Is it fun? Oh, God, no. But what are the demands of you as the player, right?
What's your take, Sharif, on this, on the difficulty level argument? I mean, do you think that playing on easy and then saying the game's great is...
I think
easy
is
fine, great,
but I do think it is fine to criticize a game if at its normal recommended difficulty, there are still issues with...
What do you mean recommended?
Because it's not just a bullet sponge thing that you were talking about, Jeff. Like, you were talking about direction of where people are firing, you know, and things like that. I think that those are criticisms that can be a little bit masked by an easier level because you're just not dying as fast. I have no problem with people playing on like easy. I play games on like easy. It's fine.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with playing on easy. I'm not, you know, I'm not doing that. I'm not difficulty shaming. Not even close. No. I hope the listeners don't get me wrong.
I wasn't trying to insinuate all. But I do think that, yeah, I would criticize a game if at its normal difficulty level, if they're not going for sort of a Dark Soulish kind of vibe with the difficulty, which I haven't really heard from the marketing or from the general buzz around this game. If they're not going for that, then yes, I think that I would criticize a game for kind of being haltering progress because of things like direction, like not being able to tell the direction of shots and stuff.
Yeah. Let me just say one other quick thing, because I don't want to get it further confused, and I know we're kind of beating a dead horse here, but it's also important for me to think that it's not just that it's difficult, right? I know difficulty is kind of this weird taboo word, especially when you bring up Dark Souls and stuff, because people like that, and there's nothing wrong with difficulties per se. What I'm saying is the inherent mechanisms are frustrating, and not frustrating because they're difficult. This is obviously for me. If you're awesome at Wolfenstein, save your emails. You don't have to tell me that I'm just bad.
DLCfeedback@gmail.com.
Yeah, but you can send them. But yeah, for me, it is inherently a frustrating endeavor that is mitigated by just going, oh, well, I can just take more hits instead of addressing the key concept, which is, hey, the shooting isn't very good.
Well, I think the criticism still, having completed the game on easy, those criticisms are still there. I think if you or our listeners go back and listen to me talking about the game, or you can watch my streams, it's still there. You still realize that finding out, locating enemies isn't great, that enemies still take too much to take down, that there's problems with the combat of the game in the game. And so I think all of those things are valid. I don't think reducing the difficulty changes any of those critiques of the game. And I think as a critic or personality or whatever voice in gaming, I think you can recognize and critique a game on any difficulty level. And I don't think one or the other makes that critique less valid. I think you disclose to your audience how you played it and how it presented. And I think if a developer, and again, like Bungie and Halo, I think popularized this theory of it's meant to be played on whatever they said, not even the default on that. It was one up from that is what they said it was meant to be played on to get the true experience. Like if there's only one way for me to experience your game, don't give me an option. Guess what? Destiny, there's no difficulty option in Destiny 2. There's just the game. And if there's an option for me to change the game, for anyone to say that that's not the right way or the intended way, or you can't then heap praise or criticism on a game because of the difficulty level in which you played it, get out of town. Get out of town. Stop it. Of course, that's ludicrous. Because
well, I don't disagree with the point you made about, you know, the important part is disclosing it, which you weren't, you know, you weren't not mentioning that. You did mention that, so that's fair. And I think that, yeah, you're more than welcome to play the game at any difficulty and have the comments you have. I'm not saying you did anything wrong. I'm just saying that I think sometimes things – I think it might be slightly misleading to understand how the proportion of how much it feels wrong to me and how much I didn't like the game is based on a lot of that feeling. And that feeling was accentuated because I wasn't playing it on easy, but it's not like I was playing it on hard either. You know, it's not that the game was difficult. It's just that it didn't feel fun because all of the things that were wrong with it were enhanced by the fact that I also was.
Yeah,
dying
I think of like as a result. Difficulty, as you said, when we're, Dark Souls, Cuphead, all this stuff. That's something that, you know, is difficult, but if you play it enough, you'll start to recognize the patterns, get better and better, and succeed. When it's a mechanics issue,
right. That's
a little different because that's like, you know, yes, you can get better at, you know, sort of avoiding the mechanics or subverting them. Or doing something like, you know, like a lowering the difficulty level, you know, to sort of get around it. You know, as I said, playing on whatever level's fine, but I would give some criticism to a game where I felt like, you know, I had to do that just to get through and have an enjoyable time. But
yeah, I think that's the key point, right? Is like I feel like I have to play it on easy, or else I won't play it. I don't know. That's a bad thing.
Let it go. Let it go.
Let it go. All right. I will let that go. And I'm sure people will say that, you know, we're just wrong. Also, that the game is easy and they breeze through it on the killer difficulty, and we're just bad. Which is probably
again,
true.
The critiques of the game aren't its difficulty; it's mechanics and how it feels, especially compared to Doom.
Hey, I want to tell you about Audible, guys. Oh my goodness, do I love audiobooks and spoken word entertainment? You're listening to spoken word entertainment right now. Who knew? DLC the podcast is some of that. Audible is professionally designed. I mean, these are the great works. These are pulp fun books. These are thousands and thousands of titles. The thing I use Audible for, and this has served me well in my life, is as a temptation, is as a reward. I will use an audiobook to, as I say at the beginning of this show, power me through a workout or a run. I love getting hooked on a story and getting pulled through my chores or my workouts or whatever. Or my commutes for that matter. And that's the reason that I save that stuff. And it makes me do those things so I can find out the next bit of the story. Audible has, oh my God, all the stories. I think the rule is they have all of the books, all of the great things, thousands and thousands and thousands. I love the little thing that they say here for Audible. Resolving to cook more. Let the sauce simmer while the plot thickens. Chores seem endless? Polish your car while you shine up your life. Laundry won't do itself. Rinse and spin while you soak up inspiration. whoever wrote this is a dang genius. I'm in love with the text here. I can't improve on that. Enjoy a walk in the park. Add a twist in the plot. Turn walking the dog into the biggest adventure of the day. This is just, I mean, come on. I should just read this.
I mean,
this.
That last one's a little, depending on how you read it, but go ahead.
I should just read this verbatim. So Audible, leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment on the internet. This is audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, so much. And magazines, newspaper publishers are even putting stuff on Audible. You get a membership that gives you one free audiobook a month, exclusive sales of 30% off all regularly priced audiobooks. You have your free apps on your iPhone, iPad, Android, Windows Phone, even. Both of you out there that have Windows phones. I was sitting next to a lady on the plane yesterday who had a Windows phone. I was like, what?
Solid
who
OS.
Are you? Solid OS, for sure. Don't, as long as you don't want apps. But they do have the Audible app. So there you go. You can download and listen to it, pick it up free, keep it going. It's not a streaming or rental service. You own your books. It's so great. And they have a great listen guarantee. If you don't like it, you can swap it out for a different book. I'm going to give you a suggestion for a book. The book that I read. Hey, why not listen to me read an audiobook? This is a science fiction book called Traveling in Space by Stephen Paul Leyva. It is a comedy science book. I find it delightful. I thought it was really fun. The idea is it's what if first contact with aliens happened, but it happened from the perspective of the aliens. So aliens meeting humans for the first time, figuring us out and all what that means. It's hilarious and fun. I did like 40 character voices in it. So if you're delighted by my Mickey Mouse in this episode, just wait. I have 40 other voices in this thing. We're going to hook you up. We'll give you a free audiobook. Why not try Traveling in Space? Or if you don't want to try Traveling in Space, and really you should try Traveling in Space, you're about to hear me later on the show do my parting gift, and it's a book. It's Oathbringer. So spoiler for my parting gift, but get on that train, get on the Stormlight Archive train, because that is an awesome book series. You can listen to it on audiobook. Really, really cool. With Audible, we'll give you a 30-day trial membership. All you got to do is go to audible.com/DLC, audible.com/DLC, and then you get a free audiobook, 30-day trial membership, and the joy of listening to that stuff. Do it! That is right. The triumphant return of tabletop time to this very show, ladies and gentlemen. And that's because I spent a delightful weekend at Board Game Geek Con. If you ever have an opportunity to attend Board Game Geek Con, BGG Con, I highly recommend it. I got to tell you guys, it was, I think, my favorite convention I've ever been to. And I've been to a lot of conventions. Wow. And this is, it's like a convention like conventions used to be, where it was literally people convening to do a thing. Because we think of conventions now, it's like, ooh, announcements and panels and superstars and all that. BGG Con is like, hey, we all like board games. Let's all go to the same hotel for a weekend and play them.
I don't know. They flew out Jeff Cannata, so I think they had superstars covered already.
They did fly me out. I was there as one of four special guests, but one of them was only there for the first half. And I don't know how I rank among them, because I was by far the least. I would want to see me least. Rich Sommer was there. Rich Sommer is a friend of mine, and also an actor you know from Mad Men and Glow and a lot of other stuff. He's awesome, but he is a massive board game fan. Really the guy that got me into board games in a large sense. Because I went to a board game night at his house when I was just learning about them. And he was like, oh, here, look at all this stuff. And I was like, whoa, I have to own all of that. So he was there. He's been there like 6 years in a row. Eric Lang, the board game designer, who has designed many amazing games, Blood Rage and the others, and Marvel Dice Masters and many, many, many games. And Rob Davio, who friend of the show, Rob Davio, of Legacy fame, Risk Legacy, Pandemic Legacy, Seafall, on. Rob, unfortunately, was splitting his time between that and PAX Unplugged, so he wasn't there when I was there, but it was the four of us. But the cool thing about the convention was it was just thousands of people with the biggest board game library that you could go and check out anything you want. The biggest board game library I have ever seen. I don't know if either of you saw my Instagram of me walking through the board game library, but it's a sight to behold. It's like Shangri-La of board games. It's an amazing thing. It's just endless. I don't know how they transport those thousands of games around, but they do. And you have these giant hall, this giant, what do they call it at a hotel? You know, this banquet hall. That's what I'm looking for. And just thousands of people playing board games and super friendly and will teach you games and you can, it's just amazing. It was so positive and warm and friendly and good people. And I saw all kinds of really cool things. They had giant dexterity games there, like oversized crazy stuff going on. There's a competitive top thing that they do every year at late at night where people dress up and compete like WWE style with tops, literally spin a top in a little container. And whichever of the four people's tops is the last one spinning as they bump into each other and knock them, you know, into the sides of the container and all that stuff is the winner. And people are cheering and chanting and it's a blast. So much fun stuff. And I played about a bedillion D games because I did not sleep. Because all I want to do is play more games because they have the hot games list, which is like stuff that's directly from Essen in Germany, which you can't even get here in the United States yet. It's so much great stuff. So I don't have time to go into all of it, but I will tell you about a couple of them. I want to tell you about Meeple Circus because I think both of you guys would find it delightful as I did. Meeple Circus, I think, is like number 8 right now on the BGG hot list, games list. Is big buzz game, one of those hot games. Do you guys know what a meeple is?
I do not.
No, I could guess, but no.
Okay. A meeple is sort of the designer board game mascot. It's like it is a wooden token that is in the shape of like a little person. It's got arms and legs and a head. And they're used as markers in a lot of games. And because designer board games, as they were happening, you know, just a few years ago, as they were coming into existence, the meeple was introduced and it became sort of the symbol for board games. So you'll see this sort of five-pronged little man. And there's a lot of games that use them. And there's a lot of games that have like custom meeples that are variations on that theme. Well, this game called Meeple Circus is circus themed. And you have these little people, meeple, these little characters, little wooden tokens that are in the shape of human beings. But also you have a bunch of other meeples in the shape of animals, circus animals like horses and elephants and tigers. And you have barrels, little wooden barrel tokens and like planks and all kinds of weird stuff. And you start with only a couple of them. And then everybody in this auction phase bids on and acquires new pieces into their collection. So you get new pieces into your collection. And then there is a timed sequence where you create a little tableau in front of you on your little circus pad. Everybody has their own little tableau. And you try to stack them in very specific, precarious formations based on a series of scoring tokens that come into play that tell you if you, for example, stack two of the people on top of a plank, then you'll get X number of points. Or if you put an elephant on top of a person with another person on top of the elephant, you get Y number of points. So there's these very strange, precarious little balancing acts that you have to do. And you create this little circus performance in front of you with stacking these meeples sort of Jenga style, but they're all odd shaped, so you have much more difficulty getting them to stay there. And the way that the game times you doing that is through an app that plays ridiculous circus music. So it's like, and So you're like frantically trying to make your little meeples balance on one another before the time runs out, before the song ends, as your hands are shaking and you're knocking things over and they're all so precarious. It's wild fun. We were uproariously laughing throughout it. It's just a silly, wacky, goofy game, but I bet both of you guys would have a blast playing it.
Sweet. I'll have to check it out.
It's called Meeple Circus. Meeple Circus. Another game I'll mention real quickly is called Hunt for the Ring. This is a game that's just coming out now. It's a Lord of the Rings style game where I've talked about several games like this. They're kind of popular right now. One against many. So the new Doom board game is like that. One person plays all the bad guys and everybody else plays Marines, and you have everybody against one person. So that is very common, that you know, one person plays all the bad forces and everybody else is the good forces. Well, Hunt for the Ring is Lord of the Rings themed, but it flips it on its head where everybody else is playing Nazgul and the single person is playing the Fellowship, is playing Frodo, trying to get the ring to Mordor. And the game is in two phases, two sides of the board. The first half of the game, you're just trying to get from Bag End to Rivendell. And then after that, you're trying to get from Rivendell to Mordor, I think. And it's kind of this like catch the person in on the board. Frodo can move secretly, and everybody, all the other players are coordinating their Nazgul movements to try to trap Frodo, to figure out where he is, to track him as he moves through the area. So you can use your senses to try to find out where he was last and try to narrow him down. And if you get him, you infect him with your evil and prevent him from getting to Mordor. It's great. It's not my favorite game, but it is pretty interesting and a cool twist on this very popular genre of one against many, because the good guy is the one, which is not usually how it works. But very thematic for Lord of the Rings, really high component quality, and a pretty interesting little game, Hunt for the Ring. All right, Sharif, you listed a game, Dungeon World, on here. Let me tell me about that.
Yeah, so you know, so I've been playing this game with my girlfriend and another friend as well. It's been pretty cool. I mean, you know, we're in a fantasy world. We have our character sheets, you know, good stuff. And I'm playing as a ranger. My nickname, which I'm very proud of in the game, is Ranger Stranger Danger, which I think is pretty great.
I like that.
You know, our friend who is the GM is just very, very good at setting up like this world. We haven't played it in a little bit because I've been out of town, so we haven't played in a couple weeks. But we've definitely played a bunch of times, but we played on a weekly basis. And man, you know, this is like, you know, I haven't done a lot of tabletop as of late, but man, this is like, when we play, it's literally like I get the same feeling that, you know, I do when I'm immersed in a video game, you know, except yeah. that in this game, I've almost died several times because I just cannot roll well. Like I just have bad luck. Bad luck with the dice. So I've been trying to up the stats that give me extra points on some of the rolls. But wow. Yeah, it's super fun. When I told a lot of people that I was playing it, I did get a lot of negativity on Dungeon World. I guess it's pretty divisive. I guess there's some people that really don't like it. But for me, I think it's great.
I don't know. It looks like it's relatively recent. 2012 is the first printing. It's a tabletop RPG rule set. I'm not familiar with it, so it's interesting that you're playing that. But yeah, looks cool. Looks high quality.
Yeah. It's like very fun. It is a little overwhelming at first if you haven't done a lot of this like before. There are a lot of different stats and you have to unlock moves and, you know, track your health and damage and armor and all that stuff. But, you know, as long as you have somebody to walk you through it, I think this is definitely the most accessible tabletop thing that I've done. And I think it's great. So, like, I think if you're looking for something to play with some friends or some people that, like, might not have either done it in a while or even never done it at all, I would suggest this one. As long as you have an experienced GM, I think you'll have a great time.
So again, that's called Dungeon World. Christian, you played a board game recently.
Yeah, this is quick. It's a game we've all heard of. It's called Guess Who. And my folks got Estelle for her 5th birthday, like the classic edition, which looks like, as I'm assuming most of us listening will remember it. And I think it's easy to write off that game. But for that, my daughter just turned 5. She loves it. I see how her brain is working in terms of like recognizing different character types. And part of it is like, hey, it's profiling. It's not the best game. Realizing that we're all different. But I think if you teach it well, it's like, hey, we're all different, but isn't that beautiful? You know, whatever. It's easy. I think I have jokes about Guess Who. It's easy to pick fun at a game that's like, is this person this? Gross. Don't do that if you are a parent teaching your child this game. But it's interesting, I think, from a learning perspective to see her with the idea of like, does this person have yellow hair? No. Okay. I need to then put down the other thing, where it's like, as an adult, that's easy. But as a kid, learning the concept of yes, no, it's almost like the idea of like, may I open the door? Or, you know, like, or can I? Yes, you can. May I? It's similar to that. She loves it though. And she's played with a couple of other younger friends. I feel like for the 3 to 6 year old, you can find it cheap, and it, you know, it's the same game, you know, when you were little, and that click, 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 click sound, it's still satisfying. It's so good when you just get to do like a huge run. Like if your first question is your person bald? And they say yes. It's like a pachinko machine. You're like, brrr. It's great. It's great.
Guess Who? All right. Moving on. I want to thank our third sponsor. I'm wearing my Simple Contacts right now. What are my Simple Contacts? Well, they're contacts from a whole variety of different manufacturers, the contacts that I need, but I got them in a simple way. It is so simple to get Simple Contacts. And I got to tell you, I loved the process. It allowed me to avoid all of the complicated thing of going in and, you know, going to the optometrist and getting your new prescription. If your prescription isn't going to change, why do you have to do all that? Simple Contacts does it all for you with an app. What? How does that work? Well, let me tell you, it's really cool. You load up the Simple Contacts app, you set your phone the designated distance away, and it does an eye test for you. And then, even cooler than that, they run it by their licensed doctor. So every single eye test that you do on your phone with a Simple Contact app is reviewed by a licensed doctor, and then you receive your renewed prescription and order your brand of lenses. So they can renew your prescription, get your lenses much faster, much easier. You don't have to make an appointment. You don't have to leave your house. It's all done so easily because Simple Contacts is simple, hence the name Simple Contacts, and they get you contacts. So that's why it's called Simple Contacts, because it's simple and you get contacts. Do it. It's so great. All you got to do to get started is use our promo code. Go to simplecontacts.com/DLC. Use our promo code DLC. Get yourself $30 off your contacts. That's pretty cool. And show your support for our show. That's simplecontacts.com/DLC, the promo code DLC. I have to tell you, this isn't a replacement for your periodic full right. eye health exam. So it does not check for, the potential eye diseases you may have, you know, which is very important when they x-ray your eye and look for tears and stuff like that. But in the interim, that's, you know, your periodic eye health exam, you need to do that. In the interim, get your contacts renewed. So easy. Your prescription renewed. Get your contacts. Save money. Get them sent right to your house. It's so great. SimpleContacts.com/DLC, promo code DLC. I use them. I love them. I'm not going to stop, Dom. I'm going to keep going. Sorry about that, guys.
We're going to pause. We're going to just take a breath.
Yeah, just let it hang awkwardly there for a second. And here we go. And by here we go, I mean I'm not ready. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have a parting gift coming up, so stick around for that. But Sharif Jackson, thank you so much for being here once again.
Oh, absolutely.
Sir.
Good time, man.
How are you?
As always. Thank you so much.
And thanks for being here late at night. I'm getting a little punchy. It's late for me. I'm sure it's even later for you in Milwaukee. Tell people where they can follow you and your exploits online.
So if you go to sharifjackson.com, sharefjackson.com, click on the My Projects, and that links out to everything. That links out to the Spawn on Me podcast, which I record on Twitch with Khalif Adam, Cicero Holmes, and Tanya DePass on Thursday evenings. You can also subscribe on iTunes as well. That also goes to my Gaming Looks Good YouTube series at gaminglooksgood.com. And also goes to my Twitch stream, where I stream under Reef Jackson every Friday, from 2 to 5 Central. So check me out at all those places and on Twitter, of course, at Sharif Jackson.
Awesome. Christian Spicer, what do you got going on this week?
Well, I just want to vouch for all of Sharif's stuff. Not that anyone needs me to, but if you don't, I watch his streams a lot when I'm around and able to, and they're great. I think my personal favorite is your Mario Rabbids.
That was a lot of fun.
A delight. those are great. Now back to me. I will be in Salt Lake City with Justin Willman December 14th, 15th, 16th, and 17th. I think that's Thursday through Sunday at Wise Guys. Come to those shows. They're going to be awesome. I can already feel it. Justin is just the best. Just the best. I'm so excited to work with him for this like long weekend. And it's not in LA. So if you're not in LA, come to that. Also Movember, I still have my mustache going. If you saw us live on my Twitch, you see it. It's there. It's still there. And what that is doing, if you go to my website, christianspicer.com, you can find the link. I'm raising money for St. Jude's, who's helping kids battle cancer, and I will match your donation. So I will donate to the Movember Foundation, which is men's health issues, and also to One American Appeal, which is hurricane relief. So you'll get a spend some money, tax end of the year tax write off deduction, and I'll turn your $1 into $3. So do that. Help kids, right? Help kids and bankrupt me. someone asked if I have a cutoff. I do. I don't know what it is, but I'd love to get there. Like if someone just dropped like, here's 10 G's, and I'm just like, oh God, I can't match that. But thank you. And then as of we were recording this, happy birthday, Uncharted. I just wanted to give a shout out to Uncharted.
If you're listening, Uncharted, happy birthday.
You turned 10 and you're one of my favorite game franchises. So happy birthday. I wish I could be so fortunate and look better the way Drake does over those 10 years. He looks better now than he ever has.
Indeed. I have lots of other stuff for you to listen to as well, if you're so inclined, including a daily video game show. I do newest, latest, best every single day. It's about 10 minutes long, keeps you up to date, fills in the gaps of this show. There's lots of stories that we don't have time to touch on in the weekly show. And I do have time because I'm getting at you every single day, 7 days a week at newest, latest, best. So find it on your podcast player of choice or visit anchor.fm/NLB. A lot of really cool stuff happening there. We do a thing every Sunday where we talk about people's top 5 games of all time. It's like my favorite thing. It's so fun. In fact,
I have not.
You gotta do that, man. I would love to have you on. Yeah, I would be very grateful if you did. Also, we have concerns at wehaveconcerns.com, although we're taking a Thanksgiving week off. And the / Filmcast will be there with our Justice League review this week. So check that out at /filmcast.com as well. All right, guys, let's wrap the show up with our parting gift. Hey, give us a suggestion. Sharif, do you have something to help people get through their week?
I discovered The Good Place. And if you don't know what The Good Place is, it is I guess it's a sitcom, but it is a televised show that's on season two right now. The first season is on Netflix, which is where I found out about it. It is best to go in not reading too much about it, but essentially, like, The Good Place is the equivalent for what you would think of as heaven. So a woman wakes up there and hijinks ensue. It is extremely well written. It is hilarious. Like, the dialogue is phenomenal. It gives me vibes of when I first started watching a show like The Office, in terms of the way that jokes kind of just all bounce off of each other. There's a lot of awkward looks and side eyes, and it's just really, really good. And the way that they develop the plot is great. So it's really bizarre, and it kind of embraces that. It's something that I honestly was not expecting to be on network TV, but it is great. So I binged all of season one. I have not started season two yet, but I believe they're up to about episode seven or so now. So I need.
It's so funny that you bring this up, because I just started watching it this weekend on the plane. I somebody else had recommended it to me, and I love the new feature with Netflix where you can download locally to your device. And so I've watched the first five so far, and I totally agree. It is delightful and funny. I love shows that have a bit of magic in them, and this one certainly does. It's got wonderful rules.
Yeah, and it's very diverse as well. Which I appreciate. Yeah. So yeah, it's awesome.
The Good Place. Christian, what is your parting gift?
For my birthday, which was recently, my wife got me a Harrington style jacket, and I have now completed my jacket collection of men's basics. I have a heavy
hoodie.
Did I miss
your birthday? When was your birthday?
This was the 14th.
Happy birthday, dude.
Thanks, man. I don't have it. I don't think I have it out anywhere, but I don't, you know what I mean?
I'm sure I spoke to you on that day and I didn't even say it.
I just turned 21. But I'm a fan of basics, and I have timeless basics. So the Harrington, if you don't know it, it's James Dean, James Bond, the most Daniel Craig and James Bond. All the Jameses. Also, he wore it too big. It's supposed to be it's a European cut, but also Bush. When he went to the Twin Towers after they fell, which is a much more tragic time to be wearing a Harrington. But they're incredible. They're timeless, and you'll always look good in them. And I love mine so much.
We got a listener parting gift, which you can always submit by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Any kind of email works. If you want to just talk about the show, tell us what you like or dislike. But also you can send us parting gifts. This one was sent by a listener by the name of Ralph. He says, I have a great idea for a parting gift for your listeners. This week, it's time for the annual Desert Bus for Hope fundraiser. That's at desertbus.org, and it's also streaming on Twitch. He says, you have to really experience it to begin to understand, but in a nutshell, it's a group of sketch and improv comedians, along with very dedicated volunteers, that come together every year to play the world's worst, most boring video game, Desert Bus, nonstop, for as long as they can, while people donate money to see the rest of the group perform comedy, songs, and general tomfoolery and silliness. There are lots of auctions, giveaways, and call-ins revolving around all kinds of geek and pop culture goodness. Each consecutive hour of gameplay gets a little more expensive. For as long as the donations keep coming in, the crew will keep playing. The money goes to Child's Play, a charity that provides video games, toys, and books to children in hospitals and domestic violence shelters. The Desert Bus for Hope crew, now in its 11th year, is close to hitting a donation total of $4 million. Wow, that's awesome. Kickoff was Friday, November 17th, and the run generally lasts for about 6 days, so it should go through Thanksgiving. He says, I think this is a great match for my fellow DLC listeners' interests, so it would be great if you could give them a shout-out as part of the parting gift. And perhaps go and check this out. It's become a cherished tradition at my house to watch every possible minute of this for 1 week every November.
Nice.
And I look forward to it every year. Love the show. Keep up the great work. Yeah. So cool, guys. It should be going on now as you hear this. And unless you really don't listen to these very timely. But hopefully you are hearing this before Thanksgiving and you can check it out. Desert Bus, not Desert Bus, one S in desert, desertbus.org. Very cool. And as I mentioned earlier, my parting gift is the third volume of The Stormlight Archive by Brandon Sanderson. Currently my favorite ongoing fantasy series. It's only the third book, but each book is like over 1,000 pages and these mammoth hulking things, which can be a little intimidating and off-putting for new readers, especially because he says there's going to be 10 volumes of this thing.
But when does the HBO show start? Like,
I'm sure soon. Actually, this would be a tough one to do. The thing that I like most about the Stormlight Archive is that it is not your everyday fantasy series. You know, it's not Tolkien-esque. It's not orcs and elves and the stuff that you normally see in that kind of stuff. It is a completely fresh take. It's a wholly created fantasy world that has its own rules and its own mythology and its own aliens and it's not aliens, but you know, crazy races and stuff. It's different, but it's got like the DNA of Jedi's sort of in there. Cool. And it would make a great video game, I think, but it's completely unique. And this is the third book. It's called Oathbringer. It just came out this week. I'm like 4 chapters in barely, but I love it. I love it. I love it. The good news too, Brandon Sanderson is a machine. He is a machine. So you can guarantee that 10th volume will come out. So he puts these things out at a regular pace. So it's not like some other authors that will remain nameless. All right. That's it. We did it, guys. A big, long, oversized episode, but it was fun. Thank you very much to Sharif Jackson and Christian Spicer for being with me on a Sunday evening. And thanks to all of the folks that hung out in the chat rooms and did it with us as well. You guys are much appreciated. Remember, Sunday nights, 7 p.m.-ish, probably Pacific time will be the new general start time for at least the immediate future. So hopefully some of you can join us and contribute in real time there as well. We will be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.